Hello and welcome to the Third and Goal podcast. We continue our season reviews tonight by flocking to Baltimore, a side with the league's best running back and quarterback and who have won so many games over the last couple of years but have so little to show for it. We want to know why. I am, of course, joined by a man who's brought his A-grade beer game tonight, his words, in Rob, and a man who scoffed his tea faster than Tyreek Hill can run in Dan. How are we, gents?
Good, thanks, Fred.
Very well, Fred.
You didn't think my beer was an A game, though, did you, Fred? You were.
I thought it was absolutely disgusting, if I'm perfectly honest.
Well, you're Carlin.
I've got a black Scottish sour ale fermented with coffee and cocoa nibs, aged in bourbon barrels.
I'm out.
Yours look nice, Dan. Yours look nice.
Mine's okay. Sainsbury's. Tastes the difference, mate. IPA.
IPA. Very nice. Well, to talk us through the Ravens season, we have a man well schooled in all things Raven. Tom, how are you?
Yeah, very good. Thanks. Thanks for having me.
No problem at all. Well, to kick things off, I'd like to touch just on the back end of the 2019 season. Very quickly, you won 12 regular season games in a row. Lamar was on fire. And then you go and lose to the Titans in the first postseason game. So imagine frustration galore at that point. And what did you want to do going into 2020 to put that right?
It was such a gut punch, really, that game. I remember watching it and just feeling like I couldn't believe it was happening. Going back, straight away, you could just tell that we had a problem defending that style of running game. Mm-hmm. In games where Brandon Williams, our big nose tackle, plays, we're incredibly good against a run. And when he doesn't, it all fell apart. So that was an area which was a big concern, and they kind of addressed that by bringing in Calais Campbell and Derek Wolfe. And so it just felt like going into the last season that as long as the offense could continue to do its part, that the defense was getting better and that we should have been all right.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, as you mentioned about addressing it, there's you sort of half, you know, sort of covered off my sort of the second part of that question there as well quite nicely. I mean, leading into the 2020 season, it all started business as usual, destroying the Browns 38-6, beating the Texans 33-16, and then sort of falling short in your first test there, really, against the Chiefs there. How did you sort of view that game?
The Chiefs, I mean, they just become kind of, I think it was Lamar said that they were our kryptonite, and you can see it that the game, sometimes we don't seem to have known how to play them. And that game, it was a bit of a strange one because the weather was quite poor. But If you took away Devin Duvernay's kick return for a touchdown, we really wouldn't have been anywhere close to them for a lot of it. And that was the first game where I remember thinking, this O-line isn't going to hold up for the whole year. And we kind of patched it together with after Marshall Yander had retired and you worried about it. But then the first few games, you're like, oh, no. Through and Lamar not having time to throw it, and that's when alarm bells started ringing for me a little bit.
Cool. Well, I'm sure Dan's got plenty of questions to ask on this as well. I'm sure there are plenty of occasions where this comes up tonight, but your thoughts on Lamar Jackson's running game? I mean, obviously, you mentioned the O-line fell apart there, but you only threw for 97 yards in that particular game. That's against a good defense, and you know that was you undoing in the postseason before as well. So what is your general take on Lamar as a thrower of the ball?
I mean, he picks up a lot of hate for it, and it's like, I think it's easy to find ways to criticise him because, like, Lamar's such a different quarterback to anyone else in the league. I mean, you know, Kyler Murray is probably the nearest to it, and maybe Trey Lance will be the next nearest that we see this season. But with Lamar, he's such an athlete that we just haven't really seen too many players like that too often. And when you do get players like that, I think it's very easy for us to try and deconstruct them and really look for the flaws. But like, you look at some of his stats and yeah, there's outside the numbers throws, that's his weakness. And I'm not going to try and defend the stats there, but like, he's an incredibly efficient passer within certain levels of the game, going over the middle and in the intermediary. And even as a deep passer, he's a good passer. It's just also unfortunate that over the last 2 years, the front office hadn't necessarily supported him in the right way. Like, look at players like Miles Boykin and going back to the back end of last year, Des Bryant, like throwing the ball to Des Bryant in 2020. This, we've got to do better for a league MVP.
I want to pick you up on something you said there about obviously the treatment of people that hate Lamar gets, because it's a really funny contrast you get in the media, and you get so much just generic football talk of in modern NFL you've got to be able to throw the ball, you can't just rely on a running game, and then people saying, oh, Lamar's sort of a new modern QB and all this sort of stuff, but the two comparisons don't ever marry up, so I'm never quite sure, you know, if people are just trying to get Lamar for the sake of getting at Lamar, or, you know, I'm probably more inclined to think, actually, you know, you do need to throw the ball in this, you know, in this the way NFL is at the moment, but they seem to want to get at him, the media, quite a lot more perhaps, and contrast themselves to in doing so.
Yeah, like I said, I think it just it comes back to that kind of thing of because he's so different, it's very hard to kind of break him down. But like, there's narratives that Lamar can't pass, but like, he's the fifth most accurate quarterback in the league over the intermediary area since he came into the league. He's the sixth most accurate on deep passes in that time. And at the same time, he's had the most runs of 15 yards by any player in the league in that time.
It's well, like, Tom, can you tell me who's got the highest percentage of INT-free games out of all quarterbacks with a minimum of 32 starts?
I'm hoping you're going to say Lamar Jackson.
Trick question. No, of course, Lamar Jackson's 66.7%. So, you know, some funny stats out there, isn't there, with him? And
yeah, and I think that's the problem because it's like, you know, the way people see it, you see there's these kind of stats that back up that he's not a bad passer, but then you can watch games like the Titans playoff game in 2019 or the Chargers in the year before that, or even the Bills game this year, which was hampered by weather. And it's very difficult to say, well, why am I not getting 200 yards passing out of him a week? Well, because the Ravens don't necessarily want to do that.
Which is fine when your O-line holds up, but when your O-line doesn't, he was in, it takes away that opportunity, right?
Exactly, yeah. And I mean, Marshall Yander, I mean, when he retired, I mean, he should be in the Hall of Fame. It's pretty difficult for guards to get in the Hall of Fame, but he was so integral to that line that he made up for the inadequacies elsewhere. And then you end up starting players like Patrick McCarry in there, who was an undrafted player, and it's, you know, then Ronnie Stanley goes down for the season, and all of a sudden you're shifting your right tackle, Orlando Brown, over to left tackle. Errant snaps are happening at centre, and of course he's going to get a little more skittish behind the O-line.
I think you've got some good running backs as well. I mean, Ingram, whether he, I don't know what the situation is with him, whether he, you know, be back next year. But you've got Dobbins and Edwards as well. And, you know, Dobbins looks like he could be something pretty special. So you've got some good running backs as well. I know, you know, if your quarterback can run and catch the defense off guard, then that can add a different dimension to just running it with a running back sort of thing. But, you know, you have got a good team that, and we'll touch on it later, I'm sure, when we get to the draft and who you've drafted, which are, you know, some more wide receivers. But, you know, you've got a team which, especially if your O-line can stay healthy, you know, you could have a really strong running game with Lamar and the running backs that you've got.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Mark Ingram was cut. I mean, we didn't even get through all the way through the playoffs and we cut him, and it clearly turning the ball over to Dobbins and Gus Edwards as like a 1A and 1B. And I think the thing that was really impressive last year for me was how much Gus Edwards came along. Like, he's when he first came onto the team as, I think he was an undrafted free agent, he was very much just, he's going to smash through and he's going to get you 4 yards every single time. But now he's turned into a player who's reasonable with his hands. He can catch a decent ball. He's also developed a much more lateral game. He's really good at making cuts and moving. So between those two, if they can stay healthy, and Justice Hill, who's pretty much on the team mainly as special teams now, I think there's enough there that they should be able to continue to just rack up the yards on the ground every year that they want to.
I mean, you moving on. I mean, your October was very successful. 3 wins on the bounce. It's a strange first 6 games, that, because on paper it looks like you're going to have 3 hard games in the Browns, Chiefs, and Eagles be back the Browns way easily. Lost to the Chiefs, but I mean, it was a tight game with the Eagles. But at the same time, they were sort of falling apart very slowly at that point. So really, if you didn't come away with a win there, it's disappointing. You of course then go to the bye week. So you had a good amount of preparation for the Steelers game on November 1st there. But it's another close one again. That's probably a very frustrating defeat, because those are the teams you want to be beating, really, aren't they, in the sense of, you know, you're trying to prove you're a top tier NFL side and you go and lose a tight game there.
Yeah, difficult. I mean, it's like those kind of games against your really close division rivals. I mean, for me, those can swing so easily, can't they, if teams across the league, but losing to Pittsburgh at home never feels good. And it kind of, it came after, like you mentioned, there was a couple of games which really we'd been lucky with the schedule, which, you know, playing Washington and then the Bengals and then the Eagles. I don't think that if we'd had those games that we would have been even looked upon as favorably as we were, because by that point there were issues starting to come at with the O-line more and more. And you could see even against the Bengals a couple of weeks before the Pittsburgh game that Lamar's throwing was poor that day and things weren't sitting quite right for him. And then you could get to Pittsburgh and I think it was the very first throw of the day was intercepted for a pick six. And you just, you know, head in hands, like, come on, we've got to do better here.
It's funny you say that, Tom, because you look at all the last 18 regular season games you played prior to that, you'd lost one. So, like, if you're looking at that from outside and you're thinking, God, they're good, aren't they? You know, there's not, you know, if you're not really looking too hard, you're thinking that is a team ready to go. And then you're sort of telling us about all these issues you guys had, which were slowly developing. And do you think the guys bought into their own success a little bit there? And
I think it's tricky. I think it's like, for me, I mean, I've been a Ravens fan since 2008. So I'm slowly like acclimatizing to a new level of play that never really felt like we had under Joe Flacco, where it was a defense and ground and pound game, really. And so now to live in this era where when we want to, we're supposed to be able to turn it on and play in a really kind of razzle-dazzle way at times. To watch the games, I'm kind of a masochist. I end up watching each game 2 or 3 times a week. To go back and watch them, and each time you're like, hang about. When I was having a few beers on Sunday watching that game on one telly and Red Zone on the other, that looked a lot more impressive. And now I'm sitting here watching it and, wait a minute, why is that tackle letting that player through time and time again? And why is Marquise Brown not ever separating? And you just start picking it apart and seeing the stuff that cleverer people than me are probably seeing the first time they watch it.
Well, while we're picking out the errors, I want to move on to week 10 and talk about why Jacoby Myers is throwing touchdowns against you, Tom.
I mean, that game was, I mean, realistically, that was a game against New England where you're like, right, we shouldn't be losing to this iteration of New England. Mm-hmm. And you could see on that play straight away that Patrick Queen was covering, I think, was it Rex Burkhead who scored the touchdown?
Yes, I think so. No, it wasn't. No. It was Rex Burkhead. Sorry, yes, it was. Yes, apologies.
And Patrick Queen, he had a good start to his rookie season and like his high points are really good. But when you get a linebacker who's trying to play in coverage like that, he should have done better. And then the whole rest of that game just, it, you know, it descended into an absolute monsoon. And that was also the turning point for me where you start worrying what was happening with the passing game. Was it repairable? Because by that time, Willie Snead looked to be the wide receiver one in that over Marquise Brown.
I mean, in your defence, and New England weren't very good, and I'm a New England fan, I can say that, but they did well against Kyler Murray, they did well against Lamar Jackson, and you compared Kyler Murray to the, you know, to Lamar Jackson in terms of closest fit and stuff. And Bill seems to do okay against run-heavy quarterbacks for whatever reason. And I guess you can do a bit more in terms of, you know, what the schemes can look like and how you're going to set up.
A little hard because the previous year in 2019, we destroyed the Patriots at our place. I think it was a Monday night game.
There's no need to go into that, mate.
And that was one of those games where you're like, right, maybe we do have enough to go to the Super Bowl. So then in this year where it all went downhill against them, you're like, well, if we can't beat the Steelers, do we deserve to be going to the postseason? And at that point, we were kind of like, we really needed to be winning every game to stand the chance because Cleveland and Pittsburgh were doing so well each week.
That said, though, I think, Dan, I mean, we all fancied you going to the playoffs, didn't we? Even when you were 6-5, I think we all said in the previous podcast that you'd all get there, I think I'm right in saying.
Yeah, I think it's in a way out. If they won out like the last 4 or 5 or something, I think it was, then that would be sufficient, and that's the way it turned out to be.
Yeah, I think we all fancied them to get there. I think when you look at the running of the last 5 games, it was favourable as well with the Cowboys. Right, Cleveland are a different proposition than they have been. But then the Jaguars, the Giants and the Bengals again. It was probably, you know, if the Ravens didn't get to the playoffs with that sort of running, then, you know, something was wrong really, wasn't it?
Definitely, yeah. And, you know, we were lucky that the schedule set up that well for us down the stretch.
Tom, I don't want to focus too much on many more negatives, so keep asking about the defeats, but just talk me through the 5 wins very quickly before we move on to the postseason, because that is a good turnaround. You know, regardless of the fact it wasn't easy running, you had 3 defeats on the bounce. You know, it did take a bit of a... I imagine something's gone on there to make it work a lot better. What happened?
So, I mean, I think it's kind of worth touching on before the wins. It was the Pittsburgh COVID game where, you know, we could barely string a team together. Yep. RG3 was out there trying to run around before he eventually pulled his hamstring and Trace McSorley took over. But coming back from that, Lamar was very open about how sitting at home and having to watch that game and sitting at home with COVID, he gained an appreciation for how just every game that he wanted to play. And he said that he came back with a mindset of, he wasn't going to try and push the ball into situations that didn't need to be. He was going to go out there and have more fun. And you could really see that, like, the Dallas game was, I mean, I hate the Cowboys, more specifically Jerry Jones. But so early on, it was just like Lamar had a big, long touchdown after the O-line had just spread the Cowboys apart and nobody touched him. And it was just like that feel-good feeling was coming back. And then you go and play Cleveland in one of the craziest games of the year. That ends
a remarkable game, isn't it?
Yeah. And Lamar ends up running back from the dressing room or the toilet, depending on what you want to believe.
Yeah, he went off, didn't he? I forgot that.
Yeah. And then, so that one where it's like, right, we beat a division rival who we needed to get a win against in a 45-42 game. It was like, right, we can do this now. It's
good side
easy
as well,
game
Tom.
Against Jacksonville.
Well, outside in, that looks like you have beaten a very good side. You've lost to a lot of the good sides in that season so far. So, I mean, that must have been a good thing as well, beating a side that you need to beat because they're a good side.
Specifically Cleveland, who have become, you know, a sweetheart to a lot of teams. It's like, you know, everyone was starting to talk them up as being able to go on a deep run into the playoffs, which in complete fairness to them, they did fantastic, and I'm not trying to take that away. But as a division rival, when you beat a team like that, in the last moments of the game, it was beautiful. Easily one of my favourite games in the last few years.
Well, I mean, how nervous were you in that fourth quarter? They put up 22 points.
It was awful, absolute mess. And then it was like, it was just that moment of, and here comes Lamar Jackson running onto the field. And then the very next play, you can see, as he moved away from the pocket, you could see him looking a bit iffy on his foot. But then Marquise Brown gets loose and gets to the end zone. Mm. I think after that, there was another touchdown for Cleveland because we did the classic scored too early before Justin Tucker scored field goal to win it. And in that game, Cleveland's kicker had missed a couple of very easy kicks. And for me as a Ravens fan, having Justin Tucker there every week, it's beautiful.
Well, from there, you somehow managed to beat the Jaguars. Don't know how you did it. Giants, obviously the week after, and then Bengals. And then, I mean, unless there's anything you want to touch on in those games, I think if we move on to the postseason, because obviously, you know, you had your hiccup first postseason game the season before against the Titans, and then here you go again. Let's go put that right. Was there any demons in the closet prior to the game, do you think? Or was it a case of, no, we're a better side? Now, I know outcome wasn't better in terms of the regular season, but were you ready for that, more ready for that game, do you reckon?
It was like, really, it couldn't have been any better for us, really, to play the Titans. There had been a lot of talk about how we can't play them, but the two defeats to them, one in the regular season last year and one in the playoffs, we were missing Brandon Williams, our big nose tackle, and then in the regular season, we were also missing Calais Campbell. So it's like, those were the real, they're the two players who can deal with the run. And it just felt like the Ravens really were coming into it hot and that we would be all right. And then to start the game, it didn't start quite that well. You kind of, you know, the Titans had a really nice long drive to start the game. And then you start worrying after Lamar throws an interception. And it's like, oh, here we go. Is this going to be the same old Titans game? And just at the end of the first quarter, where Lamar really pulls it together and had this great throw to Mark Andrews down the sideline that kept the drive alive. And it was just like, okay, yeah, we're starting to roll. And then Lamar does what he does incredibly well so often and scores a touchdown from running from like the halfway point. And it's just like, right, that was the feel good moment where it was like, yes, we can do this. And you see Derrick Henry time and time again give him the ball and fail to gain a first down. He didn't gain a single first down that whole game. And it was just beautiful to see him being stuffed. And then to cap it all with Marcus Peters picking off Tannehill and running to the Titans logo and dancing on it. I enjoyed that.
I think the most impressive...
Quite a bit of animosity, sorry, wasn't there? It was, sorry, yeah. There was a lot of squaring up beforehand and all sorts, wasn't there? So,
yeah, it's been
a round with Mike Vrabel, wasn't there? Few games. Round with Mike Vrabel, was it? I mean, you must be crazy, I think, to row with Mike Vrabel. Cause I wouldn't,
but... Well, if there's one thing the Harbaugh brothers are, is it's crazy when they want to be.
So if there's one head coach you don't want to be squaring off against, it's probably him, right?
I mean, Tom, what really impressed me, I don't know about Rob and Dan, but just from an outside-in perspective, was, I mean, I'm massive into the psychology of sport and how that all works. And you're 10-0 down in quarter one, and you're thinking, here we go again. This is what, well, not exactly what happened last season, but you lost to the Titans. How are we going to get over this? But you come back and you keep them to 3 points in three quarters, and you put in a very good performance, possibly a performance that I think a lot of people don't expect the Ravens to put in terms of just the all-round discipline was so good. And that, for me, if I was a Ravens fan, I'd be thinking, bloody hell, yeah, this is good. We're growing as a side. We've got all this ability, but actually, you know, we're putting the big show on today.
Yeah, definitely. I think, and in hindsight, looking back at it now, it's like, how much of that was us and how much was it just the Tennessee defense being poor, which they were for large stretches of last year. But it really, like, again, I keep going back to it, but like in that game, the O-line wasn't great at times. There was a lot of pressure getting to Lamar. And we were kind of, we put in a very good performance, but there were still enough signs that you worried, will we have enough if we get to the Super Bowl to take on a team there? Will we have enough to take on Kansas City? But definitely, I mean, that was, I'd say that game and the Cleveland game will both be games that I go back and watch several times before the season starts again.
Well, and then, unfortunately, you came up against an extremely good Buffalo Bills side. You know, very, very good. And you had a lot of players really performing above themselves for that whole season in that Buffalo Bills offense, certainly. But you kept them down offensively, didn't you? You know, it's 17 points. But what happened with your offense, I guess, really?
Yeah, and when you say about 17 points, I mean, seven of them came from a pick six as well, didn't they? So it was like, it was a real, like, the defense played fantastic, and particularly against Stephon Diggs and Cole Beasley and even Gabriel Davis, who'd all been flying for down the stretch last year. It was really
kept Singletary really down as well.
Yeah. But it just seemed like that was the night where the O-line crumbled, which is saying something for a Bills team, which doesn't have great pass rush, and you're kind of feeling, well, they just have to settle down, get the drives going. And that seems to be a problem for us quite often. If you don't get the sort of the 6, 7, 10, 12 play drives, it seems to throw us a little bit off our game. And then, I mean, Marquise Brown, I'll give him some stick at times because I feel like he doesn't get separation and he doesn't make contested catches very well. But mm-hmm. one thing you can say is that in the playoffs, he's been fantastic and he had a really good game again there. But Mark Andrews didn't seem to contribute in the way that we need him to. And I don't remember Willie Snead doing an awful lot that night. And then the weather is what it is, to the point where Justin Tucker's missing field goals. And you know when Justin Tucker's missing more than one field goal in a game, it's a bad night.
Well, Marquise Brown, he came out and spoke quite passionately afterwards. And he says, you know, you were saying you need a plan B. It can't just be run, run, run as a whole. I know that's probably an over-exaggeration because he was passionate and angry at the time. But, you know, you've got sort of a key receiver saying that. What? How do you view that as a fan? Do you agree? Do you think there needs to be improvement? It's that you say the O-line's the problem, you know, and that seems like quite reasonable assumption.
I think, yeah, I mean, it starts from the O-line. I mean, if you're not going to give your quarterback time to make these throws, then it's always going to stagnate there. But Marquise Brown, what he does very well. I'm sure we'll touch on it later when we get into post-draft stuff. But, like, the amount of balls that go his way and you're just begging for him to get a bit more separation or to go up and make the catch and he doesn't. And that goes back to his rookie season when he was playing with a screw in his foot and he said that he never felt like he was able to make contested catches in the air because he was worried about landing on his foot and the pain that he could end up with. So when he does separate, it's great. And I think going forward, I think he's going to be a more consistent and find a better role within the offense.
Well, Tom, we're going to move on from the unhappy times. We are post-draft now. We are post-free agency. We had loads of stuff go on. So, I mean, obviously, you've mentioned the O-line as a massive need for improvement. I tried to name every offensive tackle, certainly in our draft preview last week on our pod. So what have you guys done in the off-season to put the O-line right?
Well, the first thing we did was on the very first day of free agency, before it even opened, we signed Kevin Zeitler, formerly of the Giants, and he'll slot right into the right guard position, which was a big issue for us going back to Marshall Yanda's retirement at the end of 2019. So that was like, it was great to see. Lots of the fans were calling for a wide receiver, but it just didn't, none of the wide receivers who were available really felt like the right kind of signing. So you get Kevin Zeitler, and then we signed Sammy Watkins, which, okay, it wasn't going to blow anyone away, and it certainly kind of worry, is he really right for the offense? But I don't have a problem with that. It's good to have kind of veteran presence, and with Willie Snead moving on, I'm sure he's going to do more for us than Willie Snead did. Not having a dig at Willie Snead because I loved him, but he's Willie Snead. And then you get to the draft, and just before the draft, when we traded away Orlando Brown, I know to a lot of outsiders, people were questioning, well, why are you trading Orlando Brown to the Kansas City Chiefs and helping them get better? But the situation had really deteriorated. He'd said that he was only going to play left tackle going forward, and he isn't a better left tackle than Ronnie Stanley. So eventually, you know, you're in a hard place where you have to move him along. So
surprisingly, stayed in the AFC. They didn't try and move him to the NFC.
Yeah,
just get him out of that AFC.
I definitely would have preferred that. And I kind of, it sounds like when it first came out there, you could see Orlando Brown and his agent were pushing the matter into the media a lot. There was loads of talk of like different teams being interested in him, but I guess most of those NFC teams who needed a tackle seemed to be in position to go and get one from the draft. Whereas obviously the Chiefs weren't, and it just that I kind of trust Eric DaCosta that he got the best deal he could out of it. And you know, to come out of the first round with two draft picks really feels quite nice. I mean, Rashad Bateman was the one receiver I'd said that's the kind of player that we need to help Lamar. He can make the contested catches. He's got such a big catch radius that it'll help Lamar's little bits of inaccuracy.
Great production last year.
Yeah. It sounded like COVID really affected him quite a lot. So hopefully it sounds from his post-draft interviews, he's saying that he's much better now. So hopefully that won't have any lingering effects. And then you take Daffy away, who is just such a classic Ravens pick at 31, who he's an edge rusher who had no sacks last year. But the one thing I can kind of believe in our defense is that Wink Martindale is going to scheme him into positions where he gets to the quarterback.
He's only been playing football 5 years, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Crazy, isn't it?
He does look like really athletic, and I think, you know, it could be someone that's got plenty of upside as well going forward.
I've read somewhere that his 40 time was faster than Rashad Bateman's.
4.37 seconds is 40 time. I don't know what Rashad Bateman's was, but
4.39.
There we go.
I mean, I like what the Ravens did in the draft. I mean, they, you know, they addressed key needs. They got someone like Bateman who could be a, you know, really, really good wide receiver for you. You got an athletic edge rusher, you know, Ben Cleveland. It was a guard. I mean, he looks like he could be a beast. And, you know, they're three players which, you know, potentially could have big roles early on in the season for you.
Yeah, and it's not typically how the Ravens play things. Like, quite often, go back to when Marlon Humphrey, our all-pro cornerback, was signed. He barely played over the course of the first six or seven games in his first season. Go back and look at other rookies when we've drafted them. Quite often we're slow to integrate them so that the playbook doesn't overwhelm them. But I think Rashad Bateman's got to get going from day one if we really want to expand the passing game. Adafi Owe's got no choice but to go in there because we lost Matt Judon and we lost Yannick Ngakoue. Ben Cleveland should definitely be in the contention to start from day one at left guard. Yeah.
Well, Tom, talking about expansion, progression, and hopefully sort of things getting better going forward and taking that next step further into the playoffs, what does good look like in the regular season, and how far do you want to get in those playoffs? I assume you're not going to tell me you want to fall short of those playoffs. So, yeah, how far do you want to go?
I mean, it's the way that we're set up, anything less than aspirations of a Super Bowl feels just inadequate, really. I mean, don't get me wrong, if we made an AFC championship and played our hearts out and it was a good game, that'd feel successful. I look back at last season and it feels like a success. We got the monkey off our back by winning the playoff game, and people can't throw that at us anymore. Instead, it's just turned to having to open up the passing game more. So, yeah, there's no doubt in my mind that the AFC North is going to be one of the most interesting this year with if Joe Burrow can stay standing up the whole time, if Baker Mayfield can play as he did last year, and if the Steelers, you know, somehow manage to be even sort of 70% of what they were, I think it's going to be very competitive. But with the expanded playoffs now and the extra teams getting in, I'd be very upset if we didn't make the playoffs.
Brilliant. Dan Robinson.
I think the Ravens have missed a huge opportunity, and I'm playing crazy general manager here. I'd love the Ravens to go and get Taysom Hill, Taysom Hill and Lamar Jackson, 3 yards apart, both in shotgun, snap the ball back to one of them, and see a defense try and line up against that and figure out what the hell's going to happen. You're going to snap it, which one, who's running, who's throwing, who's everywhere. I mean, that'd be great to watch, right?
Not on my team, thanks.
Oh, what an opportunity missed.
Well, maybe we'll see the Saints do that.
That's my good thing. Yeah. To Mac Jones, you never know. Guys, anything else? Dan, Rob, any other questions at all for Tom today?
Thanks, Tom.
Great. Tom, thanks for coming on. That was fantastic. Thanks for.
No worries. For cheers, guys.
Thanks for listening. Thanks, cheers, guys.
Thanks a lot, Tom. Bye.